there's a little history I know on you guys about bringing, if one of you could fill me in, about bringing your demo to Greenwood and Greenberg. You know what I'm referring to here?
Yeah, well, he...
tell me about that experience of
Eric
going to, you know, Foreigner and whatever, and the guy from Foreigner.
Sure. Eric had a four-track in his house, and we would record basically acoustic guitars, vocals, and some quadriverb effects to fill in where the percussion was lacking. So here we are in the days of the cassette, and I remember them because they were these dark, clear-looking cassettes, like Coke bottle color, the cassette itself, and we used to have these baby blue paper that we used to have everything the color of, you know. But when we presented it to Green Machine Productions, which is Greenberg and Greenwood, they wouldn't just take it. That was the whole thing. In other words, we gave them these four songs, and we said, this is what we are on our own, without actually 24-track digital or even the big analog reel tapes. And you present it to them, and sure, you pay them by the hour, and you know, but they want to put their name on something. They don't want to get frustrated in the middle of the project that it's going to be something that's not going to be completed. They don't want complete amateurs that they have to handhold. And when we gave it to them, they were like, sure, we'll record your album. And, you know, that's where we got the product that we got. I mean, you know, you could always say that you have great art, but you have to let every pinball hit every bumper appropriately to get the right score.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's talk about that for a second, since I have here with me two songwriters. And I know you two both probably have different approaches to songwriting and composing.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about both of you. I want to ask both of you, you know, what's your approach to writing and maybe how coming together, you know, affected that or didn't or whatever.
Well, I'm a songwriter. I'm a composer second, a songwriter first. So what happens to me is I get the poem and the vocal patterns, et cetera. So a lot of the stuff that I would approach to my current band as well, close enough as well as Blackwood and Foti was that, or even with my other songwriting partners, Rick Castellito, Stephen DeSanti over the years, I would sing the song and find the progression behind it. But the other thing was about Blackwood was that not only that, he would also come up with chord progressions and instrumental pieces that it was my job to write a vocal pattern on top of. So that was where I got the more well-roundedness of being able to hit it from both angles.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, I came from more of a progressive background. You know, I kind of, like Anthony said, I'm more of a Marillion, Pink Floyd kind of influence. Mm-hmm. Anthony's comes from more of the inspiration. You know, I come from, like, the deep, dark recesses of music. I like the real, you know, intense stuff. And Anthony's more from the inspirational side, things like Billy Joel and John Denver. And even though we always had, like, plenty of middle ground that we could share, like Dan Fogelberg, we both believed in truly is one of the greatest musicians on earth. I think one of the great things is that Anthony kind of, you know, I was so dark that Anthony would bring me up a little bit out of the darkness and into, like, a little bit of the light. And at the same time, Anthony was bright, and I would bring him down a little bit to my end. And what would happen, I think, is that between the two of us, we were able to kind of create this middle ground that both him and I could meet at, that, you know, he kind of needed me to bring him down, and I needed him to bring me kind of up, and it was, that kind of helped a lot in terms of how the songwriting went, and that's kind of why we had such, I think why some of the songs were so different from anything that either of us would have normally written without each other at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's funny because Blackwood is a stage name and it means darkness, and Foti actually is Italian for brightness. And it was kind of funny because when we made the CD itself, we cut the CD in half and had it half black and half white, where it was black would have white lettering and where the white would be black lettering. And I was like, oh, this is so great, you know. And then all of a sudden I would show it to a friend of mine and he'd be like, oh, the CD looks like one of those black and white cookies you get at the Italian bakery. I have a thousand black and white cookies in my basement. Drink right.
I want to ask you guys another question, and then we're going to go to a song. I know you together you formed Record Records, and I know now Anthony keeps it going. Can you tell me about the formation of that, and you know, and obviously some of the background to this organization, business?
Well, I mean, it was actually Eric's idea was that we needed the label, and I happened to know a nice attorney who cut us a nice deal, and we started a New York State S Corporation, and we needed a name, and it was funny because we made it Records, but it's spelled W-R-E-C-K in the first word of it like a train wreck. And it's kind of funny because the actual symbol is a W, which is actually a record that's broken in half, and vinyl. And when you put the two halves next to each other, it makes the arcs of the W. And, you know, we ran it together, and everything was 50-50. And then when things went, went our separate ways, I continued the corporation. I mean, I had a little more capital. I also knew the attorneys and the CPAs, et cetera, that would keep it alive. And I've done ever since. I mean, and Eric, of course, got into the movie business, but his publishing for those few numbers that we have together are still owned there. And, of course, you know, if he ever gets into it to a higher level, it's all on the books. And you need that stuff on the books. I mean, that's the way it has to be. I mean, that's the fair and equitable way to be. You know, I mean, even a couple of other songwriting partners that I have. I mean, I can't find them all the time, but I'll mail their residuals to ASCAP, and they ASCAP keeps it, and eventually it should be claimed. You know, so you have to think of it that way. I mean, and plus the other idea. Is, and this is funny because we know this, because here we are men who are not little kids. Our music is primarily for and with respect white people, pretty much 35 to 55, with a more male-oriented audience. And the people who look for the 38 specials and Lynyrd Skynyrds to come around and go to Westbury and see all the reunion tours. And, you know, you can't say we're going to sell out, you know, 1,000 arenas every night and all that type of stuff. But here we are with a bunch of people who still buy CDs and don't download, who have disposable income, who pay the most money to StubHub for these type of concerts. And we have a New York State S Corporation, I do now, and the idea is that I would want an investor, an angel, like a Broadway play, to put up the money, forward close enough, show the world what we are. And, I mean, and that way, if we make it, it's all profit and all points. If we lose, we're a tax write-off. But that's what we're looking for. You're looking for that angel to invest in you. I mean, look at the Macarena. The Macarena is the highest-selling single on the earth. And the funny thing is when they saw those two 65-year-old Spanish men on that TV, people were taken aback. But the funny thing was it didn't take it away from being the highest single ever sold on the earth. So the thing is that here we are, mature gentlemen, and the thing is that, you know, as long as the music is on the radio and PLJ and Light FM and Q104.3 or whoever would play different pieces from the album, that they would turn around and say, okay, now let's see what these guys look like. And when they finally see what they look like and they go, oh, they're men, they're not boys. Yeah, but the song is still awesome. And that's that's where the industry has gone totally awry. That, I mean, bands like Mountain and Tull, I don't know if they make it these days. And it's not the type of music. No, it's not the type of music. It's because they're not pretty boys.
Right.
Absolutely. It's all visual now.
Right. I mean, you see a beautiful sculpture in the middle of a park, and you see an 80-year-old man come out of his basement who made this thing. And you would still say, my God, that's a beautiful statue. You don't turn around and look at a man who's lived his entire life who isn't a sex symbol and say to yourself, oh, that statue is now ugly. No, that high art is still high art. And music has to go back to that. And that's why we're here. That's why I'm still here. It's the album, and then it's the reproduction of the album in a live show that has to be awesome.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I mean, maybe the subject matter of the songs, et cetera. I mean, bottom line, it's rock and roll.
Yeah.
There's nothing else occurring on that stage except there's theatrics, but there's music, audio
absolutely.
And visual of music.
It's actually a very simple equation on one level.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we're gonna go to a song right now, but I have to thank Eric. I have to thank you for calling up.
Absolutely.
We talked during the week, and we're gonna talk in the future. But this is totally. I know how busy you are. I know you're. Can you reveal publicly what movie you're working on?
If
you can't, it's okay.
Yeah, no, I can. I'm working on a movie called Violet and Daisy. It's a quirky kind of. It stars James Gandolfini from
the Sopranos.
You may know him as Tony Soprano. So he's the main actor in it.
Excellent. So we'll see you. But anyway,
I finished doing Boardwalk Empire, which is like that big thing that
everyone should know that one. Excellent, excellent. We're going to talk down the road, and when you get your album, I want you to let me know. And
okay,
definitely will do. We're going to come back, and I want to talk about your solo career and the stuff you've done. But I can't thank you enough to having both of you guys here as a treat. I know Anthony, I know you said it's a treat, but it's a treat for me too. So I know how busy you are. And as Eric, you said to me the other day about these, like I choked, the Hollywood schedules. It's pretty crazy. So you have just I'm so thankful for you to find a half hour to spend with us.
No problem, anytime.
Absolutely, but we're gonna move on. But before we do, we're gonna go to I want to get into Anthony's other work since you have left him. But before we do, we're gonna go to a song that you both had a hand in recording and creating. This got re-recorded by Anthony, but because you're calling us up, Eric, I've uploaded the version with you. This is from the album you guys did together, Haunted Memories, In the Eyes of the Rose. Anthony, I know this has some special stuff about it, like you did before, or Eric, too, if you want to. What are we going to hear in a second? What am I going to play for folks?
This is a song about the thoughts of Bernard Labovier de Fontenelle, which is a 16th century philosopher, that a rose sees a gardener as an immortal creature. And the thing is, he's wrong. He's just a man. And the idea is that since the rose is misrepresenting the gardener, the man in the relationship who's symbolizing the rose as their love, is in a misrepresented relationship. And the funny thing was, we did this live at Wagner College on a great lawn as a concert in the park for some politician, and everybody in the audience was flabbergasted because it was that heart-wrenching ballad. Well, we ran out of money for the album, and my father came up and said, I'll put up the money, and he became the co-producer, Frederick D. Fody, my father. And they gave him the chair with the massage thing, and we came in and we recorded it with John Abbott, who was Dionne Warwick and Jim Stafford's producer, and Steve Jerome, who actually just passed away a couple of months ago. John Abbott did a few years ago, but Steve just passed away a couple of months ago. Steve Jerome, he's done everything from Simon and Garfunkel to Popcorn Band to Gloria Gaynor, everybody, Neil Diamond. And, they recorded this song for us. It was the power ballad, and it became our first nationally played single. And it's In the Eyes of the Rose, and it's still something that's in my repertoire all the time. And it's really funny. I've done festivals on 5th Avenue, 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn, and people walk up to me and request the song. So it's something very special. So go for it. I appreciate it.
Now, like I said, earlier at night, that featured lead vocalist Anthony. So I think now we're going to hear Eric sing, right?
No, actually, In the Eyes of the Rose is me. I mean, but Eric is on it. I mean, he's a guitar and
you're on it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell who's doing instrumentation here? Who's playing what so we know, since I got both of you here?
In the Eyes of the Rose? In the Eyes of the Rose is actually...
For the original one from Haunted Memories.
Yeah, it's no actual special guest stars. In the Eyes of the Rose is a capture of the ensemble that was our live band. There were the Giraffa Brothers on keyboards and drums. There was Mike Hoffman on the bass. Keith Ringo, who was actually from New Orleans, is a harmonica player. Eric was doing acoustic guitar. Mike Marchetta was doing electric guitar. So it was actually the live band that we would go and perform everywhere, Pennsylvania and Albany and Jersey and New York and Rhode Island, et cetera. It was... this was the Blackwood and Foti band, and we captured it what they call live, which is all the players playing simultaneously.
And I've got Blackwood.
I think one thing
Foti
should be noted too, that before you play it, I just also want to make a note.
Go ahead.
Anthony had pushed this song quite a bit, and boy, I'll tell you, this song just exploded down south. I mean, this got on every radio station from Texas to Atlanta. I mean, they were playing this thing probably 8 or 9 times a day. We were on the Gavin Report for most played song. We actually were up there with Eric Clapton for most played song down in Atlanta. I mean, it was El Paso, too. I mean, there were two radio stations trying to outdo each other. Who could play the song the most times in a day, it seemed like. So this song really got huge. It turned into a monster faster than we ever expected it to.
Excellent. Well, listen, let's go to the song. And thanks, both of you, for everything you're sharing. Here we go. This is In the Eyes of the Rose from the album Haunted Memories by Blackwood and Foti.
Like my time. the rose decided to die.
Personally, I think that creates a very nice contrast to the other song we heard, and I think really gives you guys a nice, shows the breadth of what Blackwood and Foti is all about. Maybe
you
agree? Listen, Eric, I want to ask, before we end this hour, I'm going to talk a little bit about what Anthony did afterwards with Close Enough, but is there any last final things or parting thoughts for the evening you can offer?
No, I think you pretty much touched on everything.
Excellent.
About Al Petrelli, the one thing I could say about him is that not only was he brilliant, but he was just effortless. I remember on the Old Man, which has a 2-minute guitar solo outro on it of his. We recorded it once, and he played around and fiddled around on his guitar. And then the second time around, he laid down the track. He'd only heard the song once, just in the recording studio, and he just fiddled around on his guitar while it was playing. Then he said, all right, you know what, let's just give it a shot. And Greenberg hit the record button, and Petrelli put down that lead, as it sounds today. And we were just sitting there with our mouths open. We could not believe how incredible the guitarist he was, the way he was able to come out with something that amazing in the first take without ever having heard the song before. And it was just brilliant. And he was, and Petrelli looked at us and said, okay, you know what, I think I got it. I think we're going to do it over. We're like, no, we're not doing nothing over.
Right.
That was it. That was the track. That we're not, you can't get better than what you just did. So we told him just leave it alone. It was absolutely perfect, and he was just such a professional. He was terrific. And the only other thing I could say is, Anthony, thanks for keeping it alive, man. It's great.
I appreciate it. And, very very nice talking to you. Best of luck in all you do, man. All right.
Thank
have
you.
A great
you
one.
Too. Take
all
care.
Right. Eric, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron. Sure.
Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.